Hi, everybody, and welcome to Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. My name is Ray Serebrin, and I am the host of the Midlife Crisis Dance Party radio program on KPTZ in Port Townsend. The following is one of our story time segments that we present each week. I hope you enjoy it.
Ah, you're just in time for a story.
The sky is dark, and the moon aglow, and the morning star, burning from afar, enters into view. All that I can say, all that I can know.
Yes, that's the introduction for Story Time and the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. And today's story is about a contemporary topic. It is called The Rise of the Computers, From Punch Cards to Annihilation. Today's story on the Midlife Crisis Dance Party was inspired by a New Yorker article called Data Driven by the writer Jill Lepore. It begins like this. One unlikely day during the empty belly years of the Great Depression, an advertisement appeared in the smeared, smashed ant font of the New York Times classifieds. Wanted, 500 college graduates, male, to perform secretarial work of a pleasing nature. Salary adequate to their position, 5-year contract. Thousands of desperate, out-of-work bachelors of arts replied. 500 were hired. They were mainly plodders, good men, but not brilliant. They went to work for a mysterious Elon Musk-like millionaire who was devising a new plan of universal knowledge. In a remote manor in Pennsylvania, each man read 300 books a year, after which the books were burned to heat the manor. At the end of 5 years, the men, having collectively read 750,000 books, were each to receive $50,000. But when one by one they went to their office in New York City to pick up their paychecks, they would encounter a surgeon ready to remove their brains and stick them in glass jars and ship them back to the spooky manor in Pennsylvania. There, in what had once been the library, the millionaire mad scientist had worked out a plan to wire the jars together and to connect the jumble of wires to an electrical apparatus, a radio, and a typewriter. This contraption was called the Cerebral Library. "Now suppose I want to know all there is to know about toadstools," he said, demonstrating his invention. "I spell out the word toadstools on this little typewriter in the middle of the table. And then, abracadabra, the radio croaks out a 1,000-word synopsis of all the knowledge in the world on toadstools." Lepore goes on to write, "Happily, if I want to learn about mushrooms, I don't have to decapitate 500 recent college graduates. Although, to be fair, neither did that mad millionaire, whose experiment exists only in the pages of the May 1931 issue of the science fiction magazine Amazing Stories." Lepore's excellent story goes on from there. Clearly, this is an article about an early rudimentary form of a computer with a bunch of wired-up brains standing in for a database. Reading her essay took me back to what has been my own uneasy relationship with computers over the years. From the beginning, I had no idea of what computers promised, and at each step of the way, I underestimated their significance. My first encounter with computers was in library school at the University of Washington. The computer revolution was in its infancy. We were in what is now called the punch card era. To teach us about computers, the professor explained what an algorithm was and taught us how to solve simple problems that had yes-no solutions by diagramming them on a piece of paper. If yes, do this, if no, do that, etc. I was adept at drawing little boxes and arrows. I did not do so well when it came time to input those algorithms into a key punch machine so a computer could read them. I made inputting errors endlessly, and when I finally got the cards created, I tended to either get them out of sequence or I would drop the whole bundle, then I'd have to start the whole laborious process again. I was probably the worst caveman coder in the class. At that time, my view was, if computers depended on some dork like me keeping his cards straight, the whole industry was doomed. My next encounter with computers was when I was working at the Seattle Public Library. One day, a job posting was announced for someone called a word processor to work for the library director. The posting led like a secretarial job, and it gave little clue as to what a word processor did. It did refer to something spacey called WordStar, but none of us librarians knew what that was, and the term wasn't in any of our reference books. This was, of course, back when reference books were at least a year behind whatever they were referencing. Anyway, we laughed about the idea of processing words, and we told jokes about it, like, how do you make a word processor? Put a dictionary in a blender. Ha, ha, ha. That is a very librarian joke. Anyway, we thought it was all a passing fancy. A few years later, the World Wide Web started catching on. Several of my colleagues at the library were internet evangelists, but I thought it would never take off. As I understood, to access the internet, you needed to enter long and unwieldy addresses, and I never thought that the average person would have the patience to type http://www.thecheesecakefactory.com. I mean, who would willingly do that? Probably because I was a worthless typist and an impatient person. I assumed that everybody else was. Of course, I never at that time imagined the advent of autofill or of text projections or of spell check or even that a simple language inquiry could be entered into a little white Google box. Now we have ChatGPT, the latest in the endless line of new computer innovations. I've decided not to underestimate this one, especially after a group of business leaders and experts, including the creator of ChatGPT, issued a statement warning that humanity faces the risk of extinction because of the rise of artificial intelligence. That is, of course, very scary. It makes me wonder whether we might have had a better future simply by plucking out the brains of some well-read young men and putting them in wired-up jars. I asked Google about brain harvesting, and it mistakenly gave me the instructions for what to do if my brain falls out of my head and gets dirt on it, and about how I should wipe it with a clean, damp cloth. If that ever happens, I promise to follow those instructions meticulously. As I said, these days I'm taking everything my computer says very seriously, even if it feels like we are all living in a bad science fiction movie. I think we are. I'm Ray Serebrin, and that was Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. We invite you to tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. for more frivolity, absurdity, and melody. Thanks so much for listening.